Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities with Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. Federal officials arrested dozens of people at a food processing plant in central New York last week. As the New York Public News Network's Jimmy Vielkind reports, the raid has quickly become a flashpoint in the immigration debate.
Acting U.S. Attorney John Sarcone says immigration agents detained 57 people in Cayuga County. It's the largest workplace raid in the state this year, and he says there's more to come.
You can expect to see federal law enforcement at more work sites going forward. We owe it to the American people. We owe it to the citizens that reside in the Northern District of New York.
The Thursday morning raid captured nearly a third of the workers at Nutrition Bar Confections. Sarcone declined to say why the plant was targeted. Co-owner Jeff Schmidt says the employees worked hard. Witnesses say dozens of federal agents showed up around 9 in the morning. Kayla Kelechian is the upstate director of organizing for the New York Immigration Coalition. She rushed to the factory and found a chaotic scene.
People, community members, family members, crying, inconsolable, you know, yelling out, like, where are you taking them? It was horrible. And
videos show masked federal agents walking on the factory floor and interviewing employees in English and Spanish. Halinka Zulcik is a legal representative for one of the workers who was detained. She shared the videos. Her client was quickly flown to Texas.
There's absolutely no due process going on here. I mean,
Sarcone says some workers waived their rights and have been deported. 5 people from Mexico and Guatemala face charges of illegally re-entering the U.S. after a prior deportation. None of the workers were charged with a violent crime. But Sarcone says being in the U.S. illegally is against the law, and he's enforcing it.
I have to do my job. I can't turn my back and say, I'm sorry.
Kelechian says the people are a valued part of the community.
These are vulnerable workers. They're working. They're contributing to the economy. These are families.
The plant is open again this week. In Albany, I'm Jimmy Vielkind for the New York Public News Network.
Following the raid last week in Cayuga County, acting U.S. attorney for the Northern District of New York, John Sarcone, issued a strong warning this week to employers who hire undocumented immigrants. More from the Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas.
Speaking Tuesday in Albany, Sarcone described the raid as one of the largest worksite enforcement actions in recent history. He says 52 of 57 people detained by Homeland Security during the September 4 raid were unlawfully present in the United States, and most have already returned to their countries of origin. He added 5 previously deported detainees were charged with illegally re-entering the U.S. While Sarcone would not comment on a specific employer whose offices were the subject of last week's operation, the Associated Press identified the business as Nutrition Bar Confectioners in the town of Cato when reporting on the raid last week. Sarcone says employers risk criminal investigation if they hire unauthorized workers.
Employers that knowingly hire unauthorized workers are breaking the law and also contributing to a system that harms our economy, jeopardizes public safety, and devalues the hard work of lawful employees. To employers across the Northern District of New York, heed this warning. We will aggressively pursue criminal investigations against those who violate our laws by employing non-citizens without authorization. There will be consequences. The bad old days of turning a blind eye are over.
Refugee and Immigration Support Services of MS Executive Director Daniel Butterworth says Tuesday's announcement will have a chilling effect.
Unemployment opportunities for newcomers, including those who have status and work authorization, at a time when it's already difficult for folks to find employment in sympathetic employers as it is.
Butterworth advises documented workers to have their papers with them while traveling and to obey traffic laws and speed limits. New York Governor Kathy Hochul expressed outrage at the raid and its impact on families, saying the detainments will not make New York safer.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Welcome back to the Legislative Gazette. I'm David Gustina. Back with us, as she is from time to time, Dr. Lynn Parodnik, Westchester County Medical Cannabis Doctor. And she comes with insights, with thoughts, and with suggestions for what is both a recreational and medical market here in New York. Welcome back to the Legislative Gazette, Dr. Parodnik.
Thank you, David. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that those in legalized states for cannabis count on is that their product will be tested and it will be safe. And one of the reasons given for legalizing cannabis and other drugs, quite frankly, is so that people will have a clean place, a place where they know what they're getting is what it says it is. And yet there are some issues here with so-called lab testing of cannabis in New York. Can you pick it up from there?
Absolutely. In New York State, there's third-party testing, and it's come to light that they're not quite detecting aspergillosis. I have a hard time pronouncing it. And other bacterial contaminants. With the medical decline, patients are now working with recreational products. Nobody should be exposed to these contaminants. So that's another issue that's come up. So contaminated cannabis at dispensaries is being sold, and they're trying to tighten up on the lab testing. But it just, you know, there's a lot of problems in rolling out a new program. And as time continues, we keep encountering them. But this is something that's very basic for public health issues, and we really need to be accountable for it.
Yeah, and I would imagine that many, including those in our listening area across the state, may not realize this, may not have even realized that New York gave you an option. So if you want to get your product on a menu in New York of cannabis, you have a choice, the recreational or the medical. But you have to pay more for more, quote, rigorous testing on the medical side. So it seems that what's happened is things have been getting pushed more and more to the recreational side. And those medical patients, we're not talking recreational use again now. We're talking medicinal use. Think of anybody who's suffering a severe injury and chronic pain, things like that.
Right.
The medical people don't now get as much choice as the recreational folks. And of course, the testing, as you just mentioned.
Well, it's even worse than that. The medical, number of them have cut out delivery. They've also cut out manufacturing their own products and are reliant upon the other registered organizations, the other medical dispensaries for medical products. So the number of products has decreased and access to them has decreased. The number of, especially seniors and disabled people, cannot leave their homes and now they can't get their medicines. They come up with a regimen, it works for them, and then suddenly they're thrust into this situation. How are they going to get their medicine? And we're not talking about people who are interested in recreational effects. We're talking about working with lower doses to quell the issues they have. So it gets sadder and sadder day by day because this is a program instituted to help people, not dangle a carrot and then, oh, it's no longer available.
Yeah, and you see that, obviously, on many of these menus when there's a particular product that's available and suddenly something's happened and it's not available anymore. Or the folks who rely on it start lining up, makes them very upset, creates anxiety, and causes further pain.
Exactly. And the patients are the ones who are getting lost in this. There's a lot of good with the recreational rollout, job creation, the attempt for clean products. But the medical side, the numbers keep going down and the choices for patients go down. The prices have decreased, so it's much more accessible, but it just makes it much more difficult. There are two more vertical licenses, meaning medical dispensary ones that have been awarded and will be opening. So hopefully the two new players will be able to make a difference. But I've had a conversation with one of the lobbyists in Albany, and she has told me by January, approximately 5 of the present registered organizations will probably no longer be doing medical. So it's getting harder and harder to understand what's going on. Doctors are not told from dispensaries, no more delivery. I get, you know, frantic calls 9 o'clock at night. What am I going to do? I don't have my stuff for tomorrow and they won't bring it to me. And it's particularly pathetic because a rec shop can get it to somebody in an hour. Why is the medical such a different plate of options? And that's really hard to understand.
So what are the medical doctors doing? Do they have a lobbyist? Is there a group, an association? Can you approach the architects of the law and talk about how to work with this stuff?
Well, there's a few things that have been implemented. Dr. Janelle Chin has been hired to help get the medical back on track. She's a physician who came from California, did medical marijuana with patients there, came to New York to work with medical marijuana and patients. She's been hired by the OCM to get this together, but it's much more than a one-person job. So hopefully with her oversight, things will improve a bit.
Now, there was a bit of an oops moment for cannabis when it was realized that those in the Cannabis Commission who set up the rules didn't count the correct number of feet away from a school that any of these cannabis operations would be located. And now they've since been grandfathered in. But, you know, this has always been a big worry among parents and adults that somehow children will end up getting a hold of these products. And it is certainly anecdotal to point out that I've seen a spate of articles of kids ending up getting a hold of gummies and other edibles and, you know, being rushed to a hospital.
There are many articles coming out about kids ending up in emergency rooms, getting into their parents' gummies. How a government agency could miscalculate a lot of stores, I don't know the exact number, but at least that's been settled. But this question of kids getting into products, New York has been very strict with packaging, and they're not allowed to have cartoons, animals, there's a lot of restrictions on packaging. But parents leave stuff around in their pocketbooks, on desktops, on counters. They don't really think the kid can reach it. And boom, it's gone. There's also been a lot of veterinarian visits due to the ends of joints being thrown on streets, dogs getting into edibles. So there's a lot of concern about keeping this stuff safe and wrapped up correctly, and with good reason. Also, the distance from churches, they didn't get into that. That's further than schools. The main concern was the schools.
We're speaking with Dr. Lynn Porodnik, medical cannabis doctor in New York. Lynn, if you became the president and CEO of the cannabis industry in New York, what's the first thing you would do right now to get it into a place where you think it should be?
Oh, there's so much we could do. First of all, let's get more products on the shelves. Let's make sure patients are handled correctly. Let's get rid of the online sign up in 5 minutes. This past weekend, I saw a 17-year-old who has been certified 2 years in a row by an online service that gave him 10 minutes in total over the past 2 years. They came in because the parents had no clue what to do. So there's such a need for it. I'd start with education and reaching out to patients. Also, making a space for there's a narrow band of products that are available in the recreational market that are very nice for medical issues. So if you had a Venn diagram, these med rec products can really help people. They should be available and they should be, you know, brought to market and explained why they function well and can be helpful.
Yeah, and Lynn, to add to that, the point is that they are available, but they're not available on the medical menu. And if you're allowed to purchase medical cannabis, you're not taxed on it.
Correct. And they've actually eliminated the medical excise tax. So prices will further go down for medical products. but nobody knows about this. It's so odd that you read so much about recreation and medical is the big secret. You had asked about a group of doctors. The problem is there really is no group. There is a group out of California, medical practitioner group for the United States. But in New York, the people who are doing this for real are closing up shop, doctors, because there are no patients. The numbers of patients being recertified keeps dropping. New patients, few and far between. And people now, with what's going on in the world at large, they're much more concerned about their pocketbook and paying extra money when they think they can, quote, get a good deal. So people do the online portals and have no clue what they're doing, and it just keeps getting worse and worse. The pharmacists who were trained and experienced are leaving. The dispensaries don't want to give increases in salaries to them. They keep saying how they're losing money, although many of them now have the rec stores that are really bringing in nice profits for them. So there's so much to do.
Well, there's never enough time to talk with Dr. Lynn Porodnik about this issue. And I hope, I'd like to get you on tape right now saying yes, that you'll come back again as we see this issue move forward.
David, you ask, I'm here. So say when.
Dr. Lynn Porodnik, medical cannabis doctor in New York. We thank you so much for joining us on the Legislative Gazette this week.
Thanks so much, David. Anytime. You have an open invite to talk.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. The race for New York governor arrived in Syracuse this week as Lieutenant Governor Antonio Delgado made several visits across the city. The New York Public News Network's Scott Willis stopped by a rally with the grassroots group Citizen Action, where members from across upstate gathered to show their support.
Syracuse volunteer Yvonne Griffin told the crowd the state needs to do more to address serious challenges.
We have the highest in childhood poverty, the highest in lead cases being taken to court by our attorney general, and we need a new direction. And that direction, in my opinion, is Delgado.
Citizen Action officially announced its endorsement of Delgado, a Democrat. So far, he's the only candidate from any party to declare his intention to unseat incumbent Kathy Hochul in 2026. He told the crowd the status quo is broken, and a $254 billion state budget isn't reaching New Yorkers the way it should.
The ninth largest economy if we were an independent country right here in New York. And yet and still we had the largest wealth inequality gap of any state in this country. So we got the money. The question is, where the hell is it going? It's not going to the people. This has been happening for far, far too long.
WAER News caught up with Delgado following the rally. He says the governor and state lawmakers need to show more strength in their response to federal funding cuts and immigration enforcement.
Go back to Albany and do the work to raise revenue on billionaires, big corporations, to make sure we can plug that economic hole that's going to be in the billions, to pass the New York for All Act that's going to protect our immigrant communities that are being scapegoated every single day. So there's things that we could be doing right now that would demonstrate a real fight. And not just words.
Delgado also made stops at food pantries, a barber shop, and the Dunbar Center. He says it's part of a strategy to connect with New Yorkers and share his decidedly more progressive agenda on universal health care, affordable housing, and livable wages. Meanwhile, Governor Hochul spent the day in northern New York announcing investments in border security and cutting the ribbon on a new bus manufacturing plant in Plattsburgh. In Syracuse, I'm Scott Willis for the New York Public News Network.
Microbird, a Canadian manufacturer of small and mid-sized school and commercial buses, has set up shop in Plattsburgh at a time when cross-border relations remain tense. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley with more.
In late November 2024, Nova Bus announced it had sold its Plattsburgh plant to Microbird, a Quebec-based manufacturer of small school and commuter buses. While Nova Bus continued to operate in parts of the plant until the second quarter of this year to fulfill its contracts, Tuesday marked Microbird's official launch in northern New York. Governor Kathy Hochul, who came to Plattsburgh for the official opening of Microbird, noted that securing the company is an example of the state's continued efforts to maintain relations with Canadian counterparts.
I just had a wonderful, wonderful event welcoming a company from Quebec to have their first ever U.S. manufacturing facility and to show our friends and partners from our neighboring provinces, Quebec and Ontario, that we're strong allies, that we want them to continue coming here. There's been a real hit, hard hit, to our North Country businesses. We're missing Canadians from coming over, and I want to make sure that they know that we appreciate them. No matter what happens out of Washington, we're their friends, and they are always welcome here.
The governor said the transportation manufacturing cluster in the North Country has a roughly $150 million impact on the statewide GDP.
As we usher in the rebirth of manufacturing, you're innovating the future as well. This is not old school technology. Glad we could kick in a few bucks here, almost $10 million in tax credits, a $2.5 million grant to seal the deal.
The Canadian company's move comes as the Canadian-U.S. relationship remains strained, especially amid steep U.S. tariffs on Canadian goods. Microbird is a joint venture of Bluebird Corporation, the only U.S.-owned and operated manufacturer of school buses in the country, and Canada-based Girardin. Bluebird President and CEO John Weiskill said that an existing trade agreement is critical to their success.
As part of this, we have the USMCA. So many of our components fall under the USMCA, which is critical, and hope to see that continue and flourish as it has. It's created an automotive industry between the two countries that's unparalleled. So to me, that's got to continue.
But Microbird President and CEO Eric Boulay says global tariffs are impacting the Microbird facility.
To manufacture the buses here, we have a global supply chain. We are importing components, including aluminum components from Canada and other components from abroad. So there is an impact. Right now, we are coping with it. We're integrating it to the business plan. So it's not like a surprise today, but we're doing everything we can as a business, as a company, to alleviate the impact of any tariff whatsoever to the business and to the end customers.
Boulay noted Microbird has been manufacturing buses at the facility for several months.
Things are going very well. We started production on plan in June. We're producing right now five buses a day here at the plant already. So impressive start, and we're going to continue to improve and make this plant here a true success.
Microbird plans to eventually produce 15 buses per day and increase employment to 350. At the end of the grand opening ceremony, North Country Chamber of Commerce President Gary Douglas presented the governor with a red and white guitar.
She saw our need and very personally engaged every step of the way, from personal calls and outreach to providing every form of state support needed every single time we turned to her. So thank you to our economic development rock star and number one team member for making this day possible. We have a special presentation for you, Governor.
Oh, my God. I didn't know about this, but I said this was a very cool event. I was right, wasn't I?
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. September is International Underground Railroad Month. Experts say the recognition is of particular importance to New York, where two of the liberation movement's most famous supporters lived and operated. The New York Public News Network's Alex Simone with more.
New York was a key place for Frederick Douglass, who spent 25 years in Rochester, and Harriet Tubman, who lived in Auburn, New York, for more than 50 years. Niagara Falls Underground Railroad Heritage Center Director of Community Engagement, Saladin Allah, says Douglass and Tubman were important leaders, but discussing the Underground Railroad is more than just those in the history books.
There are always people who are nameless, who are faceless, whose work was just as significantly important as a Harriet Tubman, as a Frederick Douglass, but we may not know their names. So I always start there, because it's important to strive to uncover many of those other people.
Harriet Tubman National Historical Park visual information specialist Shannon Walsh says many people don't realize how impactful the area was to the movement.
There are a lot of reasons why New York was so important. One, of course, was the connection to Canada via Niagara Falls, but also this was an area where there was a lot of social change and a lot of progressive movements that cropped up in the first half of the 19th century.
According to online records from Civil War historian Kim Warren, some estimates are that more than 100,000 people escaped slavery via the Underground Railroad, with many settling in southern Ontario. Allah says it's important to recognize the Underground Railroad's significance beyond just a month, but also see the opportunity for increased discussion. Alex Simone, New York Public News Network.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2537. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.